Hey there, everybody. Welcome to this week's episode of the Home Class Movie Chat. We are so excited for you to be here
Hey,
today.
hun,
Yes? What?
what about the intro music?
I forgot about that. Here comes the music.
Hey everybody, welcome back to another episode of the Home Class Movie Chat. We are your hosts, married couple Kat
And Paul.
And we just love movies.
We certainly do. And this week's movie is a movie that scared the living shit out of the world.
And it's one of my particular favorites. I love this movie.
I actually didn't mind this movie. Actually, when I first saw this movie, I thought it was great.
I have loved this movie ever since I saw it in the theaters back in...
back in the wind. Back in the... Yes. What
exactly.
Movie were you in today?
I am not admitting to how old I am. But let's just say I've been a fan of Matthew Broderick's from the way back.
Yes, and this movie also stars Ally Sheedy. What movie are we doing? We are going back all the way back to
1983.
And the movie, War Games. As I said, it was the movie that scared the living shit out of the world to the point where America was like, okay, this could possibly happen. So we're going to have to upgrade our security or... do other things.
We're going to actually talk about that. There is some trivia that I got for you around that. But I would like to point out that, believe it or not, this film is still a favorite in Silicon Valley. Google held a 25th anniversary screening for it in 2008.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it is a really good movie.
And it's also included among the American Film Institute's 2001 list of 400 movies nominated for the top 100 most heart-pounding American movies.
Yeah, I believe that. And Rotten Tomato have got a score of 94% of audience listeners.
Wow.
And 76% audience score. So this is very, very, this is an A-grade.
It's a highly rated film. It's a very, very well-done film.
I think it's one of those movies that they always say, you know, in the top 100 movies you've got to watch before you die.
Yeah.
You know,
I will say I can understand why this one scared people, but it still doesn't terrify me nearly as much as Terminator does.
Yeah, I don't know why the Terminator worries you more than
because
this thing.
It's so plausible and we're heading in that direction.
Yeah, but you look at the little shits that actually run around on the dark web and do hacking and shit like that, and you think to yourself, that's more terrifying than what the Terminator could be. The Terminator has to be cybernetically modified or engineered AI. So,
but we're heading in that direction.
I know we're heading in that direction, but this movie was one
is
of those.
Now. Yeah.
Yeah, this one of these movies was like, oh my God, this could do. And as we go further into the movie, we can see that this is very, very plausible. And obviously we both really love this movie. I mean, my cousin saw this movie and then decided, okay, that's it. I've got to do this, that, and the other. And look, in all honesty, my cousin should have actually gone into computer science. He should have really gone down that path.
My brother too.
Because he was very interested and very good at computers. He really was. And this was the movie that started his love of computers. I watched this movie, but it didn't grab me as much as it grabbed him with movies.
Yeah.
With computers. So I was more along the lines of, okay, let's go into horror movies instead. Yeah.
But I have to say, it also gives me a lot of respect and compassion for Matthew Broderick.
Yeah.
His father, actor James Broderick, died just a few days before filming wrapped in November of 1982.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
That would be upsetting.
He held it together and he finished the film. And
yeah.
Yeah.
But this was the movie that really launched Matthew Broderick's movie career.
Yeah. Although I believe he did Lady Hawk before this, and that might have been the first thing I ever saw.
Yeah.
I'm not sure.
I
honestly can't remember
that.
The first thing I saw him in, but I've just, ever since the first time I met Matthew Broderick on film, I've just adored him.
I think we've all seen.
And I've always been a little jealous of Sarah Jessica Parker.
Well, I can honestly say I'm not jealous of Matthew Broderick. I don't find Sarah Jessica Parker attractive at all.
I've just always found Matthew Broderick absolutely adorable.
Yeah. And we've all seen Ferris
and
Bueller's
Go figure,
Day
he's American, not Aussie.
I know.
Most of my favorite guys that I just absolutely adore are Aussies. First, of course, you first and foremost.
Yeah, thank you very
my
much,
handsome husband.
Thank you very much.
But Who I before wouldn't we trade for anything, even though Hugh Jackman is now single again.
Oh God, yeah, I guess. Before we get,
I wouldn't. I still wouldn't trade you for Hugh Jackman.
Okay, he's got more money than I do.
I don't care.
Before we get started on this podcast, if you want to reach out to us, you can reach out to us at hello@homeclassmoviechat.com. There, you can leave any comments, and we are very happy to read them out and find out how much you guys love this podcast that we do.
And we're also happy to have you leave a review and a rating anywhere you listen to podcasts.
Yes, which is on Spotify, Apple,
all major platforms.
Yeah, Apple, everything. It's all over iTunes. You can actually leave us a 5-star rating and review on iTunes.
Yeah, that actually helps us get found.
It does. It really does. But before we get started on this podcast and really diving deep into War Games, we have to listen to the trailer. So sit back and relax, because here is the trailer to War Games.
David Lightman was a master at computer games, a fast thinker.
Oh, David! Maybe you could tell us who first suggested the idea of reproduction without sex.
Your wife?
Get out, baby.
And a promising student at an old game.
Hi.
With an electronic twist.
Are those your grades?
Yeah. I don't think that I deserved an F. Do you?
You can go to jail for that.
Only if you're over 18. This computer company is coming out with these amazing new games in a couple of months. And I want to play those games. Wow.
What?
We got something.
He found the right code word to play the game.
We're in.
But it was the wrong computer.
Shall we play a game?
How could I ask you that?
How about mobile thermonuclear war?
Fine.
All right. What the hell? They're trajectory headings for multiple impact re-entry vehicles.
What does that mean?
I don't know, but it's great.
All stations, this is Crystal Palace.
I wonder if I should use my subs.
22 Typhoon-class submarines departing Petropavlovsk.
What in the hell's happening here?
Oh, my God.
Shall we play?
I have 7. Correction, 8. That's 8 Redbirds.
Get on the sack. Tell them to flush the bombers.
Russians are still denying everything, sir.
Who are you working with?
Nobody.
I do not believe you.
Over there, we have Soviet missile warning.
Based on your arrest, pending indictment for espionage.
Confidence is high. I repeat, confidence is high.
Cobra Dane, is this an exercise?
Negative, this is not an exercise.
It's been President on the horn.
It's still playing the game. It's gonna start a war.
Close up the mouth.
Is this a game or is it real?
War Games, playing soon at a theater near you.
Shall we play?
I think with that trailer, it even scares the shit out of you when you watch the trailer.
Yeah, totally.
It's like, okay, but as I said, it is such a great movie, you know. Yeah. And I've always enjoyed this movie. And the movie opens up where we're watching these guys, and they're coming into what looks like a house in the middle of nowhere, but we find out it's actually a missile command center where they're actually
probably like somewhere in Alaska by the looks of it,
where they actually control the missiles in the case of a possible nuclear attack. And we do see that there is an alarm that comes over and that says that it wasn't going to be a test. They didn't know it was going to be a test. Mm-hmm. This was a possible missile attack. So they have to go through the whole thing, putting the key in, starting the missiles up,
verifying that the message is legit with the codes.
Yep. Starting to arm the missiles, putting the keys in, getting ready to turn. So it's really, you got to put the key in, turn to ready, and then turn to launch.
And there's two of them on opposite sides of the room so that one person could not do this on his own.
Yeah.
Because they physically could not reach both keys to turn them simultaneously.
Exactly. Now, if anyone has actually seen the movie Superman 3, what Richard Pryor does with trying to turn two keys at the same time is not possible. But in Superman, it worked. But this one
is Superman.
Yeah. But as Kat said, they have made it in this regard that you cannot turn the keys by one person. One person can't overthrow the other person or kill the other person and turn both keys.
Unless you're Mrs. Incredible and you're, you know,
super stretchy.
or the one from Fantastic Four.
Yeah. But now with the whole thing that's going on, and they're believing that this is a real life situation, they put the keys in. One of the guys says, okay, I'm ready, Commander.
Now, and the other guy's like, oh, yeah, yeah. I have to talk to somebody about this and verify this.
And the other guy's like, that is not standard procedure. And he's like, Captain, that's not standard procedure. And he's like, it doesn't matter whether it's standard procedure. Get someone
on the line. He's like, I'm not going to kill millions of people without talking to somebody.
Yeah. So he does get on the phone. He calls and he goes, the phone lines are down. They might have already been hit. And he goes, okay, no worries. So they go to turn the keys to ready. And we start to see that the countdown clock, the missiles are starting to warm up. You can see the engines are starting to rev up, and we're getting down to the next last 10 seconds. And the guy that's on the opposing side takes his hand off the key.
The key. And this is played by actor John Spencer, who, if you've ever watched The West Wing, love him, miss him.
And anyone who
was chief of staff on The West Wing.
And if anyone wants to know the opposing person is Michael Madsen, who is a very famous actor that's been in a lot of Quentin Tarantino movies. So anyone
that's why I don't know who he is.
If anyone's actually seen Reservoir Dogs, he is Mr. Blonde.
Have not seen that.
But yeah, so this was one of his very first movies that he ever.
Paul won't let me watch it because it's too violent.
I will let you watch it, but just be aware that it's extremely violent.
Like I said, Paul won't let me watch it because it's too violent. He'll tell me to put my hands over my eyes most of the film.
Well, there's certain parts of the movie you wouldn't want to see. But yeah, so the other guy, it takes his hand off the key, and Michael Madsen's character is saying, you know, he gets the handgun.
Yeah, he actually pulls a gun and he's like, turn your key.
And he's like, I'm so sorry. Then we transition over to the opening of the movie.
But before you get into that,
yeah,
I just wanted to give you a piece of trivia.
Yes.
So there were several nuclear launch close calls that influenced writers Lasker and Parks to create the scenario of War Games, including an incident at NORAD on November 9th, 1979, when information on a training simulation tape concerning Soviet sub-launches was accidentally fed into the warning system, and for 6 minutes, the American military complex went into high alert. Only after no Soviet missiles were detected by the PAVPAWS early warning radar system did the U.S. stand down. Training simulations were accordingly moved off-site of NORAD after this incident. So something very similar to this actually happened and almost blew up the world. In the movie, one of the scenarios fed to the NORAD operators by Joshua is an influx of encroaching Soviet missile subs.
Yeah. Now, it's very interesting because after we transition from that scene, we go to NORAD and we are actually introduced to a character by the name of Dr. John McKendrick, which is Dabney Coleman. And he's sitting around with other system engineers at NORAD that in command of the missiles and then the missile silos. And they're talking about the fact that, you know, did these guys know that this was a test? Because one of the guys, because there's three guys that are sitting there. Along with a general, and the other guys have to report back to the president. And the other guys are saying, well, the president wants to know why his missiles were basically left in the silos. And it turns out that there's like, you know, there was like 35% of his missiles were still in the silos. And everyone, and they're like, well, did these guys know that it was a test? And he's like, they're like, no, we actually spoke to them. They actually thought this was the real deal. But even McKendrick says you cannot remove the possibility that of human emotion. You know, as the guy says, get someone on the telephone. I'm not going to kill 40 million people without being told if this is real. And the other guy, Michael Madsen's character, is like, you know, this is not the standard procedure. And he's like, screw the procedure. I want to know. So as McKendrick says, you seriously cannot, you know, stop human beings from sitting there going, oh, okay, yeah, well, I don't know whether I should launch it or not, whether it's real. I mean, what they would have done is when it got down to 0-1 launch, when they turned the key to launch, if they both did it at the same time, it would have then ran a failsafe through the system. It would have gone, it's shutting down. This was a test.
You would hope.
Yeah, just to see if you were capable of doing it.
Well, and that's why that incident in 1979 was so significant, is had they done it, they would have launched.
Yeah, that's terrifying.
And started World War III.
That is terrifying.
Yeah, it is. And Russia would have been like, what the heck? Why are you shooting us? We didn't do nothing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So we see that.
And Russia, back in the 80s was slightly more, because I believe that was the era of Gorbachev, was little bit more rational. But they do have a history and a track record of shooting first and asking later.
Exactly.
You know, I don't know if Gorbachev would have kept the level head and called Reagan and said, okay, what's going on? Why are you shooting at us?
Yeah. I mean, there is a movie that will scare the shit out of you even further called The Day After. And this was one of the biggest ever TV movies that they've ever released in America. And there is a part of the movie where the missiles have been launched and these guys are coming back onto the military base, and the two guards are guarding, you know, the installation. And one of the army guys actually says, what the hell are you doing? You're guarding a hole in the ground? And he goes, listen, and of course the missiles have launched. It takes 20 minutes to get to Russia, apparently. And the other soldier goes, hey, listen, the war's over. It's done. It's finished. We've done our job. What are you doing guarding a hole in the ground?
Well, because we follow orders and we haven't received any other orders.
Yeah, but the fact is that the missiles are all gone. The war's over. No one ever wins at a nuclear war. No one ever wins at it. There's always, you know, although there is that famous story of the guy that actually, this Asian guy that was living in Hiroshima. The bomb was dropped. He survived. He moved to Nagasaki. And it was bombed again. And he survived. So there you go.
My father was actually part of the cleanup crew for Hiroshima and Nagasaki with the American Army.
Really?
Yeah. He lied about his age. He got into the Army early and was part of he was sent to Japan to help clean up after Hiroshima and Nagasaki.
Jesus.
I still believe that that's part of why he had the health issues that he did later in his life.
Oh, I would say so. The nuclear fallout, for sure. Yep. Now, what is more terrifying about this whole thing is the fact that McKendrick says, well, hang on a minute, how about we do something very radical? Why don't we do this whole missile silo through automation without human intervention? And the control is given to NORAD's supercomputer, the WOPR, which is the War Operations Plan Response, programmed to continuously run military simulations and learn over time.
So the WOPR, as it's seen in the film, was made of wood and painted with a metal finish paint. As the crew filmed the displays of the WOPR, special effects supervisor Michael Fink sat inside and entered information into an Apple II computer that drove the countdown display. The computer name WOPR was a joke based on BRGR, Burger, a real computer NORAD once used to predict war strategies. Now, in 1983, the NORAD computer system used a 1950s-era system. After this movie came out, visitors on the NORAD tour constantly asked to see the modern computer rooms. Partly because of that, color displays, mostly on Sun workstations, started replacing the older equipment. Incidentally, NORAD only detected threats. Strategic Air Command handled responses with threats until 1992. And in fact, a line from the general later in the film, he actually says, get on with SAC, have him warm up the bullpen.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay.
Now, did you know that a video game version of this movie was made in 1984 for ColecoVision, the Commodore 64 and Atari 8-bit computer? The game started out greeting you as Professor Falcon, and you would play a game of global thermonuclear war. Your objective was to stop nuclear war from occurring by protecting the country with various military vehicles and weapons set and in a set time limit without reaching DEFCON 1.
I would love to have played that game. That would have been fun to play.
Yeah.
But the thing is that, you know, and I think this is probably one of the scarier parts of the movie, is the fact that they want to take the possibility of, you know, human beings failing out of the hands of them and being put into the hands of a machine. And as they said in the movie, what it basically says is, in the event of nuclear war, the president pushes the button and that's it. He's done.
Yeah, they don't want
the computer takes
humans
over.
To go, I can't kill millions of people.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which is a computer's obviously not going to have a problem with.
We've all seen the Terminator when he becomes self-aware. Mm. So, you know,
computers don't have a problem with it.
Yeah, computers are okay with
Although
it.
I do have to say, I like the, what's the one where he becomes Pop?
Oh, Dark Fate.
where his Terminator becomes a nice guy and a protector.
Oh, yeah, that's
Genesis. Yeah, I like that. I like his character in that one.
Yeah, and there is one coming out next year.
Yeah. Oh, seriously?
Terminator 7.
Okay.
Yep, it's coming out. They're making.
Well, no, they killed off Arnie in that one. I wonder if he's going to find a way back in.
He is the Terminator. Will. So, yeah. But now we transition over.
He'll
to
be back.
We transition over to a game. Remember a game arcade? Oh my god, I remember those. We used to have here in Adelaide. We used to have a thing called Downtown, and the song was, you know, Downtown. And then we also had a place called Time Zone, which I think they're still around.
They're still around. Yeah, there's one over at the local shopping center.
But the real, real awesome places were the old arcades. And we transitioned over to seeing this guy called David Lightman, which is Matthew Broderick's character, playing a game of Gallagher. And we've actually got a game machine that has got Gallagher on it, and it is so much fun to play.
Yeah, totally. Now, did you know that the studio had Galaxian and Galaga arcade machines delivered to Matthew Broderick's home? And he practiced on these for 2 months to prepare for the arcade scene.
Oh, God, I love that.
I wonder if he got to keep them.
That'd be awesome if he did.
Yeah.
That'd be awesome. That really would be great. But of course, he's playing away, and he's looking at his watch. Now, you know, he doesn't have his watch on his wrist. He has it beside him. And he's supposed to be going to school, and he's in and he's playing it. I mean, obviously, you just lose track of time.
It's like Marty McFly in the beginning of Back to the Future when he's playing the guitar instead of going to school.
That's right. He goes, "I'm late." But of course, we find out that David Lightman is very unmotivated, a Seattle high school student.
Well, it's because he's really high intellect, and he either needed to be in a gifted program or advanced a couple of grades. And the reason he's late and uninterested and unmotivated is because he's bored.
Okay. So I'm going to put the brakes on you right there.
Okay.
Because when he sneaks into class and, you know, his teacher's like, "Oh, yeah, nice of you to join us." And he gives him, and he says, "Oh, David, I've got something for you." And this is so inappropriate. And
yeah, it is.
Maybe in this day and age, it's even more inappropriate than what it was. The teacher grabs his paper, holds it up so everyone can see that he got an F. Now, if he is gifted but unmotivated, why is he not top of the class?
Because he can't be bothered. He's bored. It's stupid. It doesn't matter.
Right. There was a young guy who is no longer with us. He actually took his own life, who was considered to be one of the real geniuses of the internet. And he ended up dropping out of school because, as he said, there wasn't anything that I wanted to learn. If I wanted to learn about France, I could just go and read a book about France, but that's not what I was interested in. I was interested in the internet and in computers. So David is the same way. He's very much interested in computers, very interested in what's going on in the hacker community. And this is the first time that I've ever heard the word hacker, you know, but the funny thing is, in this movie, it's not they don't say the word hacker.
No, but
you don't hear that word.
But what's interesting is the movie does include the first cinematic reference to a firewall, which is obviously a security measure used in computer networking and internet security. It's the first time you ever hear that in a film.
Really?
Yep. It's the first reference to firewall. And while we're on the topic, David Lightman, Matthew Broderick's character, was inspired by a real life hacker by the name of David Scott Lewis, who is not allowed to discuss whether he ever hacked into a military computer.
Yes, I know of him because he was referenced in this documentary that I watched. And
Now, writers Lawrence Lasker and Walter Parks made friends with many hackers and security experts while doing research for this film. They later wrote Sneakers, which is another film featuring hackers and security experts.
Yeah, there is also a movie called Hackers.
Hackers. Oh, I love that. We should do that movie on here, too.
I haven't seen that movie in at least 30 years.
I think we might have it somewhere.
With Angelina Jolie.
Oh, I love that movie.
I honestly cannot remember that movie. I would really have to sit down and watch it.
I love that movie.
But the fact is that I love it how, you know, he's sitting in the class and he's got an F, and then of course there's Ally Sheedy's character, and she's really not paying much attention. She gets an F as well in the class. And I love it how the teacher
But the teacher is just so inappropriate. That's bullying. Humiliating. Yeah, and that just is absolutely unacceptable. Yeah.
And I like it how they're doing a review of all the questions that were asked in this test. And I like it how he goes to the class. Okay, so there seems to be a lot of confusion about this next question. And he says, who came up with the idea of reproduction without sex? Now, this is in a biology
class. And of course, David whispers something to Ally Sheedy.
And they all start giggling.
Yeah. And he's like, all right, Lightman, what is it? And he's like, who came up with
reproduction without sex?
And he's like, your wife? That's it. Go to the principal's office.
But of course, now I don't know whether he does this deliberately once a week to make sure that he's up to date with the password, because he goes to the office and he says that, you know, apparently his teacher wants him to discuss his attitude problem with the principal. And she's like, the lady at the front desk is like, I think he's getting tired of talking about your attitude problem. Yeah. And he goes, yeah, me too. So he walks in, but he goes around to the back where the principal's office is, and the principal's got his door shut. So he pulls open a little drawer
on the secretary's desk.
Yeah. And he sees all these passwords that are written down, but the password has now been written in and it says pencil.
Yep. And so that's the new network password,
which is interesting. So when he comes out of school, we see that Ally Sheedy's character, Jennifer, gives him a ride home on a motor scooter. And so they get into his bedroom. Now you think, oh, wow, get into your bedroom. No. David's not like this. He's going to hack into the district's school's computer and he's going to change his grades. So he doesn't have to go to summer school. And so he ends up by saying to, Ally Sheedy's character, Jennifer, you know, do you have a middle initial? And she goes, yeah, K for Catherine. And she goes, oh, these are my grades. And he goes, yeah. And he goes, oh, well, you know, you got an F, so I'm going to change it. And she goes, no, you're not going to change it. Please change it back to an F. And he's like, but you'll have to go to summer school. And she's like, just change it back. So he goes, okay. Now, this is the stupidest thing. And even I said this to Kat. So she leaves the room and she leaves the house. David's sitting there and changes her grade from an F to an A.
A. Now, that would raise questions. If he brought it up to a C or a B minus, she would still pass, but nobody would question it.
Yeah, but an A?
Yeah, no.
Come on.
No. Now, before we leave David's room, there's a couple of things that happen here.
Yeah.
First is the computer in his room is an MSI 8080. According to the person who supplied the computer, Matthew Broderick actually saved a shooting day by figuring out a programming sequence for the keyboard on his own after the instructions were lost.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, brilliant.
Now, while Ally Sheedy is there, he starts doing this. He hooks up the phone to his modem, so it's dialing random phone numbers because he's trying to find ProtoVision, which was a magazine that we saw him reading earlier in the film, which is a games company.
Yeah, in Sunnydale, okay. California, apparently.
Yeah. Now, I'd like to point out that in 1983, they did not have national all-inclusive phone plans.
Yeah.
So every single number that it dialed and connected would be a cost to his parents on the phone line.
And
that phone bill would probably be hundreds, if not like $1,000.
Which is why my aunt and uncle took the phone line and the modem out of my cousin's bedroom.
Yep.
Because they got a $2,500 phone bill because my cousin was doing exactly that.
Yeah. When I kicked my 80s. Ex-husband out of the house about 2 days later, I got the phone bill and it was for somewhere between $350 and $500. And he was lucky he was staying with a friend at that point because I would have freaking killed him. I was working two jobs trying to keep the bills paid. And he was calling England and Chicago in the middle of the day when it was the most expensive, talking for like 2 hours. Yeah, I was ready to kill. But anyway, so David has a phone line and a modem and a computer in his room.
Yeah.
And he's having it dial random numbers in search of ProtoVision. But the telephone numbers listed on the screen do not start with the usual fake 555 that most films and TV shows do.
Yeah, they do. Yeah.
It was 311. However, 311 is set aside for special purposes like 411, which is information, and 911, which is emergency.
Really? Oh, okay.
Now, what's really, I'm finding this actually fascinating. Hacking was not actually illegal when this movie came out.
Seriously?
Yeah. That did not happen until the Computer Misuse Act of 1990. This exact movie, War Games, inspired Congress to create the Computer Fraud and Abuse Act of 1984.
Oh, my God. Okay.
Representative Dan Glickman, who's a Democrat from Kansas, opened the proceedings by saying, "We're going to show about 4 minutes from the movie War Games, which outlines the problem fairly clearly." A House committee report said War Games showed a realistic representation of the automatic dialing and access capabilities of a personal computer.
Uh-huh.
Which I just absolutely finding fascinating. Now, the release of the film resulted in a substantial spike in interest in computer hacking.
Oh, surprise, surprise.
And a commensurate increase in actual penetration of computer systems. As a result, the industry was forced to make several seemingly obvious changes, like creating accounts with default rather than no password on newly installed systems. This is because prior to the film's release, it was just assumed that most computer systems would only be accessed by authorized persons, and the odds of someone breaking in was felt to be vanishingly low, except for high-value systems such as banks or the military.
Yeah.
And get this. The largest hacker the hackers have conventions.
Yeah, I've heard this one.
The largest hacker convention in the world is called DEF CON, which is an homage to War Games.
Of course, yeah.
And it's been going on since 1992.
And what they do is that they get everyone who goes to this convention. One of the big things that they do, and the only reason that I know this is because I watched a documentary about it, is that they, I don't know how they figure this out, but one or more people actually create something with so many firewalls and blocking areas in the computer system, and they basically let the participants go for it, and whoever manages to get through all the firewalls and all that to try and get to the very last thing wins the coveted award of being the top hacker of the year.
But now,
yeah.
Now, before we leave David's bedroom, one of the things that they did was make a reservation on a flight to Paris for both of them.
Okay, that's coming up.
This is when she was in the room.
No, this is when she says to him in the next scene that he's playing the games in the arcade again. And she comes and she says, "Listen, I'm sorry that I didn't get you to change my grade. Do you think we could do that?" And he's like, "Well, no, it might be rough because they might have already changed the password." And she goes, "Yeah, but maybe they haven't, so could we try?" And he goes, "Oh, I don't know, I guess we could." So they go into his bedroom.
Oh, okay.
And they change each, he says to her, "Yeah, I kind of already changed it. She said, "What did I get?" And he goes, "You got a D." And she goes, "You gave me a D." And he goes, "No, I gave you an A." And she goes, "Oh, that's good." And then she goes to sit down. He goes, "Don't touch the keys because it's random dialing these numbers."
Yeah.
And then he goes, "Let's see what we've got so far." So he breaks in through the computer and he says, "Oh, I've got a bank. I better keep that aside one day, you know, just in case I need it." And then he goes, he does something else and he goes, "Oh, I've got an," and she goes, "Oh, you got an airline?" He goes, "Yeah." He says, "Where would you like to go?" And she says, "Anywhere." And he goes, "Yeah." And she goes, "New York." And he goes, "Okay." And she goes, "No, Paris." And he goes, "Okay." He goes, "So how about we go two people?" He said, "Are you traveling alone?" She says, "Well, no, yeah. You want to travel with me? Okay. Two tickets to Paris, non-smoking with, this." And she goes, do we really have tickets to Paris? And he goes, "Well, no, we've just got reservations. We still have to pay for it."
Yeah.
And this is when...
But the fact that they have reservations to Paris,
that is
the country,
is a big flag.
Will come we'll find up out later.
Yeah. So as we're going through, he is, you know, he's working out what he's got through on the computer, and he finds that there is a system that doesn't identify itself, and he says, "Oh, try anything," and he types in help, and she says, "Well, you can do that." And he goes, "Yeah, the more complicated the systems are, the more they have to help you." And of course then it comes back to there's nothing there, and he goes, "Oh, okay, well," he says "help games." And then it starts listing all these games. Now,
like tic-tac-toe and
checkers, backgammon, poker.
And then the very last one, global thermonuclear war.
But it goes through with theater-wide biotoxic and chemical warfare. And then it goes down to global thermal nuclear
and
war.
He and he thinks like, he's in Protovision.
Yeah, because he's been looking for, because there's some upcoming games that he wants to play. And he thinks, okay, well, these are all the listed games that are coming out. And then when he gets down to global thermal and nuclear war, he's like, holy shit. Like, all right. So he ends up by going over to, I guess it's like a computer, not a computer factory. What is it like? It's like a computer office where they're working on computer programs and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And he's printed out the list of games. And he says to one of his friends, you know, he wants to play one of these. He wants to play these games. And as the guy's reading down the list, he goes, "This does not come from Protovision." And he says, "Well, yeah, this is what I went under their system." He goes, no, you've got something more than this. And one of the guys takes the paper and he goes, "Wow, where did you get this?" And he goes, "I think it's military." And he says, "Well, okay." And David quite rightly points out, "Well, if it's military, why the hell would there be things like chess and checkers, backgammon and
there are
poker?
Logic games that would help a computer learn."
Yeah. And he says, "It's basic strategy." And he says, "So if you basically want to find out what's going on, well, you need to find out." He said, "Look, there may be a backdoor password that you can get into." And this is when David says, "What's a backdoor?" And of course, the other guy's like, "Don't tell him our secrets." And he goes, "Well, it's not a secret. A backdoor is basically," and I didn't even understand this when I first saw the movie, it's when a programmer creates a computer program and puts in a secret password that only he knows. And as he says,
so that when he gives it to whoever paid him to develop it, if he ever wants to, he can get back into it
without them knowing. Yeah. Cause he can use his secret password. And he says, "Well," and he says to David, "Well, if you really want to find out about all this, listen, just go to, you've got to find out who designed the system."
Yeah, who developed
it. He goes, "Come on, I don't even know the guy's name." And the other guy's like, "Why are you?" And Melvin. And who
I love
is,
Melvin.
Melvin is so funny. He goes, "You guys are dumb. You guys are so dumb. I figured this out all by myself." And he goes, and David goes,
"Oh, really?
Oh, really?
If you're so smart, Melvin, why don't you tell us?"
And he goes, "Just go to the first game on the list, right through Falcon's Maze." And that's the very first game on the list of the thing, Falcon's Maze, which is F-A-L-K-E-N-S Maze.
Yep.
Is the first game listed. So he discovers that Stephen Falcon is an early artificial intelligence researcher. And he was been developing these games where it basically helps the computer to learn. So it learns from its own mistakes. And you see there is because he's been spending an entire week off of school, and Jennifer comes over and he got a videotape from the library, and it shows that the research that Falcon was actually doing.
Yeah. Now there's a couple of things that I really want to talk about with Professor Falcon.
Yeah.
So the first one, and I just think this is so cool. The writer's main, do you know who the writer's main inspiration was for the Professor Stephen Falcon?
No, I don't.
Cambridge Professor Stephen Hawking.
Hawking. Ah, shit.
He was originally approached to appear in the movie, but declined because he didn't want the producers exploiting his disability. So that being said, so he was the inspiration,
but the
part of Professor Falcon was actually originally written with John Lennon in mind to perform the role.
John Lennon, the singer.
John Lennon. Yep.
The singer.
Yep.
Oh, good Lord. Yep. No.
So the computer scene we're watching this black and white film of Falcon with his son showing him playing against the computer.
Yeah.
Okay. The computer scene in the black and white film of Falcon is made up from components of an IBM AN-FSQ-7 Combat Direction Central built in 1954 to protect the U.S. from Soviet bomber attacks. It was the largest, heaviest computer system ever built, weighing 250 tons and taking up an entire floor of a bomb-proof blockhouse.
Oh my God.
Components of decommissioned systems were sold for scrap and bought by film and television production companies who wanted futuristic looking computers. The components used in this film were previously used in films including The Time Tunnel from 1966 and 1974's The Towering Inferno.
Really? Oh, okay. Now, when I went to see this movie at the cinema, now, anyone who's listening to this episode, it was released in 1983. Now, there is a scene in this movie where the entire cinema of adults went, "All right." So, as they're talking, there's Jennifer watching the video, and she says to Matthew Broderick's character, David, you know, well, can't you write to him or call him somehow? And he goes, well, no, he's dead. And she goes, he's dead? He wasn't that old. And he goes, oh, he was pretty old. He was 41.
Well, when you're 16, 41 is old.
And I remember the entire cinema that I was watching this movie went, oh, right, 41's old. Piss off.
At 16, it is. I remember at 16, 30 seemed old.
And now I'm 51 watching this movie going, oh, 41's old. Give me a break. I'd love to be 10 years younger right now.
No, you wouldn't.
Yeah, I would.
No, you wouldn't. You'd be married to your ex-wife again.
No, I wouldn't. No, I wasn't married to her. I was. Yeah, I was. Damn it. All right. leave it with the age that I am right now.
Yep.
So as we're watching, we find out that, you know, his son had passed away, and that the rapid decline of his health, Falcon passed away. And I like it how David goes, well, that's right, because Jennifer also says that, you know, her father was very sick at one stage, and they thought that they were going to lose him. And David says, hang on a minute, what was his name? And she goes, hang on, my father's name? And he goes, no.
The son's name.
His Falcon's son's name. And she goes, Joshua, because he'd been trying to get into the computer system. And every time he went to log in, it said login. And as he went to do a password, it would say, nope, no password, decline, you can't get access. And he goes, okay.
It's like, no, it can't be that
simple. It can't be that easy. He types in Joshua, and he finds out that this is the backdoor password into...
Which is, okay, people, if you're ever creating a password, do not use things that are easy to guess, like your kids' names, your grandkids' names, your pets' names. Don't do it.
Listen to Kat, because she deals with this every day. She works in this field. So when she says...
There's a lot more I could say about it, but just let's leave it at that. Don't use easy to guess, simple things like that.
Yeah. So it was the fact that Lightman does not know that this Sunnyvale phone number connects to the Whopper computer in the Cheyenne Mountains. And the Cheyenne Mountains is a place where they have a bunker for the president, isn't it? If in the event of an attack, they
it's
go to
one,
Cheyenne.
It's one of the bunkers,
One of the bunkers, yeah. So he starts talking to the computer, and the computer is saying to him, would you like a nice game of chess? And he goes, yeah, later. But I'd like to play global thermonuclear war. And the computer agrees with him, says, okay, fine. He asks him, which side does he want, America, or he wants Russia? And of course, he picks Russia. And the computer starts a simulation that convinces the military personnel at NORAD that actually Soviet nuclear missiles are inbound.
Are heading, yeah.
And it's like, holy crap, you know, we didn't even get a launch detection. We didn't get anything. And then it's like, oh, hang on, there's subs that are starting to mass away from Russia. They're heading towards the coast and all that sort of stuff. And this whole thing is going out of control. And it's, I like it how with everything that's going on, David, in the process of all this, his parents actually ask him some question. And he says, listen, I'll be down in a second. And they're like, no, you're coming down now. And you know, you can see that NORAD is absolutely on edge with the fact that there's a missile detection launch that's going on. There's Soviet tanks that are moving. There are Soviet subs that are moving. There's soldiers that are on the move. This is all done by simulation. So David, you know, and they've dropped down from DEFCON 5, which is peace, to DEFCON 4, which is there's a definite threat. And David just turns off the computer, and it wipes out the screens at NORAD, and then suddenly there's nothing going on. Everything's normal. There's no launch detections. There's no
subs. Oh, because he turned it off.
He turns it off the thing, so it basically literally switches it off. But they did actually try to get a trace of what the hell was going on, and they do find out where it was that the call originated from. But, of course, the whole situation is diffused. But unfortunately, Joshua nonetheless continues the simulation to trigger a scenario and win the game. And of course, it just continuously feeds false data such as bomber incursions, submarine deployments to the humans at NORAD. And of course, they keep raising the DEFCON level, which is terrifying because this could start World War III.
Yep.
So the following day, David is brings home his report card that he's changed to make sure that he doesn't go to summer school, and he learns while his father is watching a news broadcast, that it actually triggered an actual nuclear threat, that there was, everyone was on high alert. And the phone rings. And first of all, when the phone rings, it keeps getting this thing. And it's basically the computer telling him, put the receiver onto the cradle and turn the modem on, turn the computer on, because I need to talk to you about something. And we find out that, and as David says, you know, is this a game or is it real? And he goes, well, what's the computer says, what's the difference?
Yeah.
The computer doesn't understand the difference between real life and a simulation.
Yeah. Because in its world, it's all simulation.
Yeah. It's all the same thing. Of course, then the phone rings again because he takes it off the receiver, and it's Jennifer. And Jennifer's like, David, are you watching TV? And he's like, yep. And she goes, is that us? Did we do that? And he goes, yep, maybe.
Well, I love the bit where he puts it back on and he's talking to the computer, and then he switches it off and he just sits on the bed looking really scared.
I know.
Love that. This is why I love Matthew Broderick.
Yeah, he just, and it, so much so that when the computer rings him again, he disconnects the phone out of the cradle, and he's sitting on the bed hugging the telephone as if to say, I'm not putting this back on.
Yep.
But of course, we see in the next scene that
David ultimately is a good kid.
He's just very unmotivated, and
he's motivated, just not in
very, very
constructive
very
ways.
Yeah, very high. But then again, he didn't really know what he was doing. He thought he was playing a game at ProDivision.
Yeah.
And as he does say to the FBI, because the next scene we see that David's coming out of a 7-Eleven, and he's arrested by the FBI, and he's taken to NORAD. Now, why you would be taken to NORAD, I do not know.
No.
But he wants to be. They want to have a discussion with him, and they do say to him, you know, you broke into our system, you know, why? And he said, I was literally trying to find a game. I wanted to play a game. And he's like, when you found out it was.
So you just thought global thermonuclear war would be a good thing.
But
to
no,
do?
Mr. McKendrick does say to him, well, okay, so why did you call it again if you knew this is what happened? He said, well, I didn't call him.
It called me.
Joshua called me. And he's like, computers don't call people. And he said, well, yes, well, yours did. Yours called me back and wanted to talk about what's going on. This whole thing is just getting out of control with the fact that this game is still running. And so McKendrick has to go down to speak to a couple of the guys who are actually briefing the president and also the FBI. And David is sitting in McKendrick's office, and he goes onto the computer and he finds out that Joshua is still playing the game. And as David does say, okay, you know, I'm not Falcon. Falcon's dead. And the computer says, I'm sorry to hear that, but you know, it's upsetting. And he goes, well, okay, so we're playing this game. What is the ultimate objective? And he goes, and the computer says, to win the game, which basically means that when I get down to zero,
I'm launching.
And he's like, oh, shit. But we also find out that Falcon's not dead. Falcon's been subsequently removed from the real world, removed from the project, and made it look like he passed away to make sure that he's safe and whatever, because that way people will leave him alone. So this whole thing of him dying, that, I mean, obviously his son did die, but the fact is that he hasn't passed away. And the computer actually gives David the list of the classified address where Falcon is supposed to be, and she is actually now under an assumed name of Dr. Hume on Tall Cedar Road. So I was like, okay. But we do see that, you know, finally, you know, David does say to McKendrick, you know, I know what's going to happen. Joshua's playing the game. He's going to launch a war. But we find out now.
And it's interesting that he keeps referring to the computer as Joshua.
Joshua, yeah. And the FBI have decided to arrest him and charge him for treason. And it's like, okay. But I like it how David ends up by escaping NORAD by joining a tourist group. So they've got tourists.
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, they've got tourists that actually go around. And this is something that I didn't even realize you could do. And I don't know that this is actually
real. I would totally do it.
I would do it too, but I don't know whether it's real. There's tourist groups.
Remember on a previous trivia note, I said that when people were touring NORAD, they wanted to see the more futuristic computers. So they actually started upgrading the equipment so people would stop asking to see the new stuff.
Okay, so you can actually go on tours of NORAD.
They have non-secured areas of NORAD where they will take a public tour.
Well, in this scene that we see, there's a tourist group that go into the secured area of NORAD. Okay.
Now, I want to point out that this tourist delegation is from Birmingham, Alabama.
Okay.
And that is a tribute to director John Badham's hometown.
Really?
The fact that they're from Birmingham.
Oh, that's cool.
Yep. And the NORAD command center built for the movie cost $1 million, making it the most expensive set ever constructed up to that time. The producers were not allowed into the actual NORAD command center, so they had to imagine what it was like. So in the DVD commentary, director John Badham notes that the actual NORAD command center isn't nearly as elaborate as the one in the movie, calling the set NORAD's wet dream of itself.
Yeah, I can imagine that.
So the crew built the command center with 12 giant monitors. According to the visual effects supervisor, Michael Fink, those kinds of screens just didn't exist. The monitors were actually rear projected, similar to the way live backgrounds have been inserted into movies since the 1930s.
Yeah, it is a very, very impressive set. I must admit, they did a brilliant job. No, I like that. And the fact is that also that the way they set up this scene where you walk in and you see this enormous elaborate screens, it's visually stunning to actually see what they've actually done. But we do find out that, you know, David's going to be transported somewhere else in a few minutes. So he ends up by managing to escape and joins a tourist group. And as I said, you know, it's just unbelievable that he was able to escape this, you know, secured facility with the FBI. But the funny thing is that, you know, the FBI has lost David. He's now been, you know, he drove out on a tourist bus, and they don't seem to be even start to try and find him. You know, you don't get any searches outside.
Well, it took him a minute to realize he was even gone.
I know. So he ends up by ringing Jennifer and asks, you know, her for some, he needs an airline ticket to where because he's in Colorado, and he needs an airline ticket back to where he was living. But we find out that they've got to get to Oregon Island, where the widowed Falcon now lives under the assumed identity of Dr. Hume. And they do find him, and Lightman and Max start to talk to Falcon about the fact that this whole thing's going on, that you designed this program, that Joshua is going to launch a nuclear attack. And he basically, and as you know, Falcon says, well, the world is on an inevitable path to nuclear holocaust. And Falcon's like, well, sorry, David's like, well, it doesn't really matter to you. You're already dead, you know. And he does start to recant a conversation about watching his son die. And he says, you know, just watching humanity die, it's inevitable. And he said, look, you know, we are only, you know, a couple of miles away from a nuclear installation, one giant flash, and we're vaporized. He said, we will be spared the possibility of wandering around blind and dying, and
surviving
the nuclear holocaust. Yeah. And as David says, you just won't make a simple phone call to NORAD to stop Joshua. And you can see that Falcon's just not interested. And this is what was really hard to understand. It's like, well, come on, you know, you just need to make one phone call to NORAD to say, listen, I know I'm not supposed to call you guys, but what you're actually seeing is not real. But we do see that, you know, of course, David and Jennifer decide to leave his house, and they're on an island, of course. And I like how the fact that, you know, David's like, well, we need to get off this island, so there's got to be a boat around here somewhere. Now, the scene that I'm going to talk about with them talking about getting off the island, you know, there's Jennifer saying, well, how far do you think it is to swim? And he goes, I don't know, 2-3 miles. This is at nighttime, of course. And she's like, well, let's go for it. Let's just go for a swim and swim off the island. It was freezing cold in this scene.
Yeah.
But there was literally fog coming off of the water.
Yeah.
You could see their breath.
Yeah. Now, what's interesting is Falcon's home was built on a soundstage at MGM Studios. And I love this. Most of the set pieces are from Little House on the Prairie from 1974 and old dinosaur movies.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, old dinosaur movies.
Old dinosaur movies. Well, he does actually show an old dinosaur movie to Jennifer and to David.
Yeah. But I just love the fact that the part of the set is from old dinosaur movies.
But I'm telling you, anyone that sees this movie would look at his house and go, Oh, God, I want that house.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, I'd love that.
Like, it is a two-story rustic giant cabin. It is. It looks brilliant. And where it is situated, you know, in the woods, it is just, it would be beautiful to live there.
Yeah.
You know, because, the way they actually discover Falcon is they're walking around the island trying to find where he might be on Tall Cedar Road. And he's flying this pterodactyl remote control creature.
Yeah.
And it buzzes David and Jennifer, and that's where he comes up. And of course, he says to one of them, he goes, is either one of you a paleontologist? I desperately need a paleontologist. And they're like, nope, we're just high school students. It's like, okay, well, you're on private property. Get off. Go. You know,
and I love it. It's like, go down road till you get to the gate. Open gate, go through gate, close gate. Get up.
Get on the ferry. Go.
I've always loved that line.
So when they're talking on the island, and David says, and of course when Jennifer says, we can swim it, and he goes, we can't swim. I don't know how to swim. I wanted to learn to swim. I thought there was going to be time to learn to swim, but now the possibility of a nuclear war, I'm not going to get a chance to do that. I'm not ready to. And even Jennifer says to Falcon, I'm only 16. I'm not ready to die yet.
Yeah.
And that is anybody's. I mean, you ask a person that's 97, are you ready to die? No, I'm not ready to die. I want more life. Everyone's got that whole idea. And even to the fact of like the movie Blade Runner, where you've got an artificial intelligence going to his maker and going, I want more life.
Yeah, I mean, even my mom, who was 91, would have liked a little more time.
Yeah,
before she died.
Everybody wants more life. Everyone doesn't want the end.
I don't want just life. I want life with you.
Yeah, I want life with you. And and that's one of the biggest things that I find is very hard to know that one day that's going to be extinguished. And but with what we've actually gone through. But as she says, I'm not ready to die yet. I'm 16. So as they're talking to each other on the island, we see a helicopter fly across with a huge spotlight. And as David says, oh my God, he turned us in because the FBI are looking for him. NORAD's looking for him. So, hey, there's a good chance. But we find out that it's actually Falcon who has called in a favor to NORAD and he's got a military, to McKittrick, who's got a military helicopter. And they're now going to be taken to NORAD, not to be arrested. They're going to go and try and stop this thing that's going on. And the general who is running the war room is less than impressed when Falcon shows up, and he's like, well, you certainly picked a hell of a day for a visit.
Okay. Now this isn't when they're rushing on the Jeep to try and get back in.
Yeah.
There.
Yeah.
Okay. Because according to director John Badham, when they're driving in, the Jeep trying to crash through the gate at NORAD and turning over was an actual accident.
I thought that was the case.
The Jeep was supposed to continue through the gate. They added the scene of the characters running from the Jeep and down the tunnel and used the botched Jeep stunt. So the tunnel and exterior used for the entrance into NORAD is located in Griffith Park, Los Angeles, California.
Yeah.
And it's the same. I love this. I just love this. The same tunnel was used to enter and exit Toontown in Who Framed Roger Rabbit in 1988.
No way.
And in the climax, 1989, Back to the Future Part 2.
Oh my God, it was when
Doc
was flying the DeLorean over Biff's car.
Yeah.
Oh my God, that is awesome.
But I love that it's Roger Rabbit.
Oh, I like that. That's
another movie we should do. I love that movie.
Oh God, no. I saw that once. I can't watch that. Oh, again.
Please.
So as when they get into NORAD, and the general does say you picked a hell of a day for a visit, and Falcon says, what you're actually watching on this screen, it's a fantasy. It's not real. It's actually a simulation. And they'd gone down to DEFCON 2.
Yeah.
One more.
One step away from nuclear war.
Yeah. And so they're watching, and of course, the president's on the phone, and the general says to the president, listen, I don't think we haven't really investigated this whole thing. I think what we're watching is actually a simulation. It's not actually real. And so they're watching this thing. And then we start to see the computer stages a massive Soviet first strike with hundreds of missiles. And as even Falcon says, with no provocation.
Why would they do with this?
No instigation. Why would you think that they would actually launch a massive, I mean, a massive nuclear strike?
Not just
I mean,
one or two, but like 70, 100.
I mean, they are throwing, you know, everything. Nuclear missiles from submarines, from bombers, everything. They are doing, this is a catastrophic, this is a blow the tits off the world.
Yeah, this is wipe America off the map.
Yeah.
Stuff, like the entire country kind of stuff.
Yeah. So, of course, you know, NORAD, you know, believes that this attack is absolutely genuine. But, of course, Falcon convinces the military officials to cancel the second strike and write out the non-existent attack, which is really, really quite good.
Well, I remember right before this, they were talking about, well, how can we stop it? It's like, well, can we just unplug it? Can we do this?
Oh, no, that's coming up.
Oh, is it?
That's coming up. Because what they do is they then ring. They get in contact with three military bases. So they
and I remember the one has like a corporal who's like, it's his second day on the job.
And the other guy's gone on a coffee break. And he's like, he's not here. The base commander's... I'm here. And he's like, okay, well, it's okay, son. Relax. But what we think we're seeing is not real. So just stick with us.
Stay with us and let us know that you're still there.
And so you're watching the and you're hearing the countdown clock, you know, 10 seconds to impact, 5 seconds to impact. And you see the bombs actually hit the area. Now, what should have given it away is that on the screen, you see the word NORAD, which means that would have been a nuclear strike. So it would have hit NORAD.
Yeah.
But of course, nothing's happening. You're hearing all
it's so far underground.
Yeah, but you're seeing all the bombs hitting all over America. And we don't know what's going on.
And I love that young kid. I'm still here. I'm still here.
And it's like, okay, awesome. There's a non-existent attack. So perfect.
But then it keeps going. But we're trying to get the launch codes.
Yes, we're all okay. And it's like, okay. And everyone's like, okay, call back the bombers. Everything's fine.
Yeah, so everybody's celebrating. Yay. And then they realize the Whopper hasn't stopped.
Yeah. And you're seeing this countdown clock. And they're like, so what is that? And I like how David goes over and goes to Falcon. What? Because Falcon goes over to the screen and sees these numbers and letters spinning around. And he goes, Joshua, what are you doing? What are you doing? And David says, what are those? And he goes, oh, that's the launch code. Joshua is trying to find the right code to launch the bombs.
To actually launch the missiles.
And I like it how McKendrick speaks to the general and he says, and of course the president rings and he says, what are you going to tell him? And he goes, I guess we're going to have to tell him that we may have to go through this after all. And we are going to be the instigators this time. We are going to fire the actual nuclear missiles.
If we can't find a way to stop this computer.
And that's what you said. When he says, can't we just unplug the damn thing?
Well, my personal favorite is when the general's like, if I thought it would help, I'd just piss on it.
But I like it how when he does say, well, can't we just unplug it? And the guy who's actually running the Whopper goes, no, if we unplug it, that means that the computer thinks the NORAD's been taken out and we'll launch regardless.
Immediately, yeah.
And I love it how the general looks at McKendrick and he goes, Mr. McKendrick, after careful consideration, I've worked out that your computer system sucks.
Yeah, I know. I love that one.
And I like it how he goes, I'm not going to take that from you, you pig-eyed sack of shit. He goes, oh, Mr. McKendrick, with your
education,
your education, I'd expect better from you, sir. So this whole thing, and of course, without the humans in the silos as a safeguard, the computer can trigger a mass launch. So it's like, shit, they can't even stop it because all the people have been taken out. So all attempts to log in order for Joshua.
And they've
to
taken out the Joshua back door.
Yeah, so that's gone. So they're trying to figure out, well, how are we going to get in to cancel the failed launch? And of course, we need to disable it. And in Falcon and David are sitting there trying to figure out what are we going to do. And this is where Lightman goes, put up the list of games.
Oh, no. This is where Jennifer says, I told you to not start playing games with that thing.
That's right, yes.
And they're like, games, that's it.
It's games. So he puts up the list and he says, okay. And because this is when McKendrick goes, okay, order him, order the, when it comes up, he says, okay, you're in. And you see the list of games, and of course McKendrick goes, okay, so tell it to stop the launch. And he goes, no, that is not how it works.
Yeah.
And they start getting to, okay, so let's go with the first game, Falcon's Maze. No, that doesn't go through. Poker, that doesn't go through. Backgammon, that doesn't go through. And he goes, okay. And David's looking, and he goes, it's not on the list. And he goes, what's not on the list?
Tic-tac-toe.
Tic-tac-toe. And as
I love it because one of the other guys says, "Oh, put an X there."
And he goes, "Yeah, I know." But I like it how Falcon did say to Jennifer and David, "Tic-tac-toe, why don't you play it anymore?" And Jennifer goes, "Because it's a stalemate. It's always a tie. No one can ever win." And he goes, Exactly. So we start playing, they start playing the game tic-tac-toe. And of course, David's doing it against the computer, but it's just too slow. And we're finding out that he's got 5 numbers of the 10 number launch code, 6 numbers. And then, of course, David goes, "Well, how do we make it play against itself?" And he goes, "The number of players is 0. So we start to see that the computer is playing against itself. And they're like, "What's it doing?"
And it's just going lightning fast through these games.
And David's like, "It's learning. It's learning how to play and how to win." And of course, we do see that it comes down and Joshua obtains the missile code for the launch.
But it's paused.
But it pauses because it cycles through all the nuclear war scenarios it's devised, finding that they all result in stalemates. Because you see the first nuclear strike to America, winner, 0. Nuclear subs, 0. Military, 0. Soldiers, 0. So it just keeps scrolling through. NATO, 0. Other countries, 0. And it just, everything's going through. And the computer just, it's just going faster and faster and faster and faster. And then it stops. And then we see there is, it says the winner out of it is none, and it flashes just none. And then it says, "Greetings, Professor Falcon." And Falcon
How
types
about
up,
a nice game of chess?
No, first he says, "That was a strange game."
Yeah.
And he goes, "Yes." And he goes, "It's," and the computer says, "It's interesting. The only way to win the game
is not to play.
And that's when, and everyone's looking at each other, and that's when he says,
"How about a nice game of chess?" Because the computer missed him.
Yeah, the computers restart, and it relinquishes control of NORAD and the missiles back to NORAD, and the movie starts with the credits.
And everybody breathes a ginormous
sigh of relief. And you've never seen the colonel sits down and, as you know, he is about to just, he's had a massive heart attack several times over. But the credits come up, and that is the end of War Games.
I love this movie. Now, I have one final piece of trivia.
Yes.
And I thought this was interesting.
Okay.
This film was shown to President Ronald Reagan at Camp David in the summer of 1983. He reportedly loved it, but also took on board the message about the dangers of an outside influence affecting U.S. military via computer misuse. And in 1984, he started proposing to draft to make such an act a criminal offense and for the military to start investigating potential weaknesses as depicted in the film.
Yeah. As I said, this is the movie that made America and the rest of the world shit their pants.
Yep.
Because up until that point, this was not even a possibility. But then you get this movie that says, "Oh, by the way, this is a possibility." You know, there are kids out there now that are actually earning hundreds upon hundreds of thousands of dollars a day or a week sitting in their room on a computer hacking. Would I like to be able to be one of those hackers and earn that amount of money? Hell yeah. Do I have the computer knowledge? Hell no. But I applaud people that do have those knowledge, but this is a real possibility that someone could do this. Yeah. I would hope to God that there are firewalls enacted to make sure that this would never happen, but it's scary to think that this could happen and someone could hold a country to random.
Yep.
Which is to ransom, not random.
Ransom, yeah. And they have. We just don't always hear about it.
Yeah. So no, this is, and I've always loved this movie. This has been,
This
is a movie that I can revisit, maybe
every couple of years.
Maybe twice a year. It's just an enjoyable movie, but it really does show you just how smart David is. And in all honesty, if I was the government, I said this to you at the end of the movie, is if I was the government, I'd actually be recruiting him to work in our computers division.
Yeah. Yeah, totally.
To make sure that these things don't happen, that he would actually devise firewalls and backdoor and passwords and, you know, so many, you know, things to make sure this would never, ever happen. So yeah. I would say to David, "Listen, David, you know, you did this. How about we give you, I don't know, $500,000 a year to work with us to make sure this would never, ever happen?" And I think he would be a fool not to take it because he's not motivated to do anything else, but he loves computers. So, hey, work for NORAD. We want you with us. Please come and work for us. So no, I really do love this movie. So yes.
Yeah, I've always loved this movie.
Yeah. So do we have any more spoilers or credits or anything?
That's it.
Well, thank you very much once again for coming to visit us at the Home Class Movie Chat. I know we are trying to be more regular. We've just got a lot of things in our life going on right now. But we are trying to get, so we definitely have got 3 weeks coming up of solid movies. So certainly stay with us. The next two movies are going to be a crossover from my podcast, The Horror Crypt.
But they're still really good movies.
But they are good movies. They really are. I know a lot of you sit there and go, oh, Jesus, another goddamn horror movie. No, it's not that at all. It's just the fact that we've watched.
It's a thriller.
Yeah, we've watched a couple of really great movies of late that we really want to do for you guys on the Home Class Movie Chat. So it's going to be a bit of a crossover. So you won't know that it's a crossover. Only my viewers or my listeners at the Horror Crypt will actually know that. But we've got a couple of great movies coming up. So definitely stick with us. Thank you for everyone who's downloading this podcast. As I said, we are trying to get more regular. We've just got a lot of stuff going on. And now
It's okay because the people who love us, love us. But if you are enjoying it, and we hope that you are, and you know anybody who loves movies and would like to join the conversation, please invite them. We are available on all listening platforms. If you are kind enough to and like us enough to leave a rating and a review where you listen, we would absolutely love and appreciate that because it helps us get higher in the results when people are looking for a fun movie podcast.
And now that we're getting into like the October season and December season, there may be a couple of Christmas and Halloween movies coming up.
I was gonna say it actually works that we're doing spooky movies coming up as we're getting in toward Halloween, because as the date of this recording is the 24th of September 2023, so we're starting to get into the spooky season.
Yes. So yes, that is War Games. Thank you very much for coming to listen to us.
Where can people find us?
If they want
to reach out?
Hello@homeclassmoviechat.com.
Awesome. So thank you again for joining us. We so appreciate it. And we can't wait to see you next time. And in the meantime, we'll catch you at the movies. Don't forget your popcorn, snack, and drink.
Bye for now.